something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Being wrong, nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. 1,000 people in the street singing songs and carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. You better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. You better stop. Now, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop. Children, what's that sound?
Yeah, what's that going down? What's that stuff that's going down? The empire is eating its tail. And not too soon, either. Yeah, that empire is eating its own tail, so don't interrupt them, like Napoleon said. If your enemy is making a bad mistake on the battlefield, don't be rude and interrupt them. And that's what the system's doing, and you don't have to do a lot. I know you want to do something, and you can do things, but the main ingredients for the destruction of the empire is built within itself. Yeah, they always do. This is Terrible Tommy. Yeah, and this is, what is it today? This is the 11th, May 11th, 2016. And we're all set to go here in the bunker. And we're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your donations for the radio show or any other donations you want to make. And you might want to get some of your other friends to get involved with this thing, yeah. Well, let's take care of current mail here today. We got one in here from Yonkers, New York today. Yeah, thank you. Got one in from Cheyenne, Wyoming. I bet he's on a horse out there someplace. Got one from Raymer, Tennessee. How about that? Thanks a lot. I got a certified one from New York City. How about that? And I got a nice letter from George David Loeb Jr., our creator friend, who's in the slammer down there in Indiantown, Florida, and that must be a miserable thing. Yeah, so he's one of our POWs we support. Boy, oh boy, that Africa's gone to hell, I'll tell you. It is. I was watching a film last night. I've seen it before, but it's a pretty good movie. It's a story about at the end of the Civil War, and they were trying to get the Confederate gold out of Georgia. Well, I got a call from an old buddy checking to see if I was all right, and now I lost my place of what the hell I was talking about. Yeah, I knocked off this call-in phone contact that I had, this 559-670-1473. It just didn't get enough activity. And it was costing me money to run it, so I said, time to get rid of that. So I knocked it off the air. And every time I do something like that, certain people or friends around the country call up and say, you all right? You all right? I ain't dead yet. Well, I got an email this morning from, I assume, a young man. I assume he's a right-wing racist. And he wanted to know whether I'm available to speak. And I said, well, the problem is that there's so much of the racial movement is so far to the right and off kilter as far as I'm concerned, using bad tactics, that I don't think it would be good for me to speak because, well, here's a list of the people that are supposedly involved with this. Loyal White Knights, the National Socialist Movement, Aryan Nations, Texas Rebel Knights, America First Committee, Art Jones. And Art Jones, I've known for years, he's a real first-class wacko. But he'll travel all the way across the country to go to some rally. Racial Nationalist Party, and that's Carl up there. Carl's a nice guy, but you just don't quite get it. SX Action Group, Finest Priesthood, Aryan Strike Force Combat 18. I thought that was mainly in Britain, but I guess this Aryan Strike Force is combined with Combat 18, and Harold Covington used to be involved in that Combat 18 over in England. NSDAP, that's Gary Lauck from up there in Nebraska. Pacific Coast Knights of the KKK, Racial Volunteer Force, Werewolf 88, Great Lakes Knights of the KKK. Well, Aryan Nationalist Alliance, they call it. Well, if they're so aligned, how come they need so many groups? But, you know, it's funny because I was instrumental in bringing the skinhead so-called movement into the United States from England, and instrumental in, you know, working with them for several years. Some of it was fruitful, some of it was suicidal, to which about, 30 years ago I said, hey, guys, let's quit being skinheads, and you can be a skinhead in your brain, but take off those, trappings of the skinheads and wear regular clothes, let your hair grow out, go to college, get yourself a good job, worm your way into the system where you can do us some good. Well, a lot of them did, and they're out there doing fine. I don't even know who all they are because I told them, once you get into the system, don't contact me. So I have no idea whether 1 or 50 or 100 or 500 followed my suggestion. But the rest of them stuck to the same old tired right wing stuff that was worn out. It had its day there for a while, but it's gone. It's over. But these guys are still trying to keep it going. And I told the guy, I said, look, I can't, in good honesty, come before these people and other than to give them hell. And they might want to kick my ass. And my ass is getting too old to be kicked. But I still run pretty good. Anyhow, I sent along my survival guide, which tells pretty much the way I think nowadays and what I promote. They sent me back in a statement of their roles and their organizations. And they start out with, this alliance of organizations sets itself apart from the usual tired old meaningless calls for unity, which we have all seen come and go for decades and have accomplished little in the greater aspect of our struggle. Well, that's because you never change your tactics. You got the same damn tactics as back in the 30s. That time is over. Now is the time for us all to shatter the chains of bondage. Chains of bondage. I don't feel in bondage. to smash the yoke put upon us by those whom would like to see our race obliterated from this planet. I think most of those people are white. My worst enemy seems to be white people. Our eternal enemies, I think we could get along pretty well with non-white races as long as we're separated and we didn't try to occupy them and take them over and make them do what we want them to do. Our eternal enemies have long schemed against our folks. Well, I still say it's mostly white people, and you can add in a lot of the Jews, that's for sure. Many within our own struggle have been willing to tools whom have aided our enemies by causing divisions within our own ranks. Well, you're already divided up. There's 14 groups here. 14 groups. Well, the other problem is that there's always been a certain attraction for the money. And we have some well-known leaders, so-called leaders, that have been into that ever since they got involved. And they're still doing it. Not many. Because most people find out you can't make much money out of this struggle if you're honest. Today we present the first step in reclaiming our destiny as a people. And we do so in solidarity with our racial brothers, sisters, through this agreement and bond between our allied organizations. You know how long that lasts? I've seen all this stuff was going on back in the 60s and 70s. I lived through all that. They're always going to unify. They unified for about a week. And then somebody started fighting over dues and money and stuff like that. No longer will the white movement, it says here, in the United States and Europe be considered a joke due to the petty infighting, religious infighting, or factionalism that has long plagued us. Well, a little infighting's not bad, but your problem is not that. Your problem is strategy. You have no new tactics. You have no new strategies. You haven't changed your way of operating since year one. It's get a bunch of guys together, maybe put on uniforms, go march down the street, get the creeps throwing things at you, get the cops to protect you, and then you go home. Or no, you go to somebody's home and drink a bunch of beer and then go home. So there's no tactics there. There's no new ideas there at all. Except, we'll have all the bands there to play music, you know. Well, you know, the army has a band, but they don't. The main purpose of an army is not music, it's to kick ass. Our enemies have united, while the white movement has remained splintered, weak, and wrought with infighting. Well, Bob Miles didn't do that, and Bob Matthews sure didn't do that. He took the fight to the enemy. Joe Tomasi didn't do that. He took the fight to the enemy. Today that ends as we bring our forces together, united once and for all to raise our race and nation from the ashes as our enemies quiver and scurry back into their rat holes. I'm sorry, I've heard this bullshit for decades and it gets a little tiresome. That's why we operate the way we do. One, our organizations pledge to remain allies with one another. Well, first of all, that'll happen until there's a little money in the till. Two, no religious infighting. Oh, are you kidding? Every time I do an interview with somebody who is an identity or something like that, and I say I'm an atheist, well, the guy who's interviewing me gets all kinds of people bitching about it, you know. You had that Metzger on. He's not a Christian. You don't love the baby Jesus. My God, what does it matter with you, boy? We have people of many different faiths. Oh, that's why you're so screwed up. Christians, Odinists, atheists, pagans, creators. Well, I can go along with Odinists, and I can go along with atheists. I can go along with pagans. I can go along with creators. But I cannot go along with Christianity. It's too much an enemy of the race. And if you don't think it is, just look around. No longer will our struggle be set back by brothers' wars over which religion is correct. Our race is our nation, and our skin is our uniform. Well, tell that to your radical identity people. I know how radical they can be, you know, if you're not with me. You know, when I left identity and but continued as a white racist, almost 100% of identity people never contacted me again. I was dead to them. No organization that is part of the alliance dictates to or orders any other organization that is part of the alliance. Well, I wonder what they're going to do about all the narcotics trafficking among skinheads, dope dealing and stuff like that. No one group controls our alliance. We are simply an alliance of organizations bound together for a common cause, our folk. We will support each other in public events when possible. It is not mandatory for everyone to be at everything, nor is it even possible. Well, I don't know. You know, a lot of these guys will spend $500-$600 for air flights to go to a little 50-man demonstration cross-country, you know. But if you ask them to put money into something locally to hurt the enemy, you won't get anything. However, we should support each other when and where we can. Whenever possible, we should not engage in infighting with other nationalist organizations. Well, forget that. Ever since I've been involved with anything, that's been going on. And they all swore that they weren't going to do it, too. They'd come together, shake hands, and within a month, they're all fighting. At this stage of our fight, anyone who is shooting into our own trenches and sniping at other white nationalists is either a paid agent provocateur or some other kind of treasonous tool. Well, that'll mean half of your right wing, because they love to fight and rumor and all that kind of stuff. Tell me about it. I mean, when I got charged in that deal up in Portland, I mean, the right wing just disappeared. Only a handful of people supported me. Our racial enemies have done enough to divide us over the years. Well, you're still following them. You like your Dukester, your Plastic Man, you like your Harold Covington, Fatso, and these kind of people. And they're cons. They've been cons ever since they've been involved. I'm not going to beat that drum. It's a waste of time. Be they paid agents or just some kind of mental midgets. Well, you got a lot of those in the right wing. Neither are welcome or needed in our struggle. Well, you don't have very many anyhow. If you run off the mental midgets, you're not going to have much left. For far too long, our struggle has been hindered by these degenerates. Their day has ended, and our new dawn is on the horizon. Well, sounds great. By signing this document, we agree to the basic tenets set forth and wish to be a part of a historic collaboration between white nationalist organizations. Well, number one, I'm not a white nationalist. I'm a white racist and worldwide for the support of whites all over the world, not just on a nationalist basis. Anyhow, I guess I shouldn't have taken the time to read that stuff to you, but I'll be standing by for this great resurgence of the racial right. In the meantime, I think I'll just, as the song says, I'll do it my way. I'd like to ask everybody a question. Have you ever heard Angela Merkel explain why she opened up this crazy-ass invasion of Europe? It was her that did it. She came out and said they're all welcome, started this whole thing. Has anybody heard her say why she did that? Because it was a total insanity, and the German people are, half of them at least, are going along with it. It's insanity, total insanity. If you hear her give her excuse for why she started this bullshit, because she's the Manchurian candidate who did, let me know.
When we are challenged, and then we have to be united and strong, and Angela Merkel is and remains the strongest political figure in the CDU, in Germany, and in Europe.
Yeah, that was one of the German officials saying how wonderful she is at this juncture, Angela Merkel is such a wonderful person. I think the German people have been drinking Kool-Aid or something. They're acting totally crazy. I earlier was talking about Africa being a basket case from top to bottom, but the black areas are even worse. But nobody ever seems to get it, that it might have something to do with the race. It's just the way they run their government and this and that. So you got South Africa, the rape capital of Africa, and probably the rape capital of the world. You've got Nigeria and these countries, they're so corrupt, they can't even, they're so absolutely corrupt. All these black countries do. And then you have Zimbabwe with this 80-some-year-old freak running the show that has destroyed white Rhodesia, that Rhodesia used to be pretty much a breadbasket of southern Africa, very advanced civilization, and now it's totally collapsed. I mean, starvation is on the march. In fact, all of these black countries are experiencing famine and everything else because they're too damn dumb to dig a well or build something. I mean, they wait for Whitey and the Christian churches to come down there and do it for them. But no one seems, I mean, except you and me, they don't get the message. The black race, for the most part, is inferior. Yes, inferior, and you're making it rougher for them by not accepting that. Actually, the haters are really the people that say they love the blacks the most because they're not demanding them to achieve more and work harder because they have an intellectual problem. Now, I've never said there's no smart blacks in the world, because there are. You know, however, most of them are mixed white and black, you know, that are smarter, but they're more most of the time they're more unstable, but they are smarter. And once in a while you find a very intelligent black man, but not too often. Doesn't mean you can't get along with them. Doesn't mean you need to make slaves out of them or anything like that, but it's just the fact of life. And if you don't face the fact of life on race or anything else, you're going to fail. And by ignoring the obvious fact of nature about the black race, you're just going to keep putting your finger in a rat hole, man. I'll tell you, they got a million excuses. It's white racism, man. That's why we can't do anything in Africa. Well, you've been there thousands of years. What did you do? Oh, we built the pyramids. Oh, yeah? Oh, okay. I wonder if anybody's ever seen a Negro reading a Might is Right book. I'll bet you there's never been a black man read Might is Right. Well, I've got to tell you, I get sort of bored with all these churches around here. I'm going to play a little Might is Right for us to put some zip in our dip. Okay, man, that gets me going, and Might is Right.
An ideal standeth sure. Wherever, therefore, a lie has built unto itself a throne, let it be assailed without pity and without regret, for under the domination of a falsehood, no nation can permanently prosper. Let established sophisms be dethroned, rooted out, burnt, and destroyed, for they are a standing menace to all true nobility of thought and action. Whatever alleged truth is proven by results to be but an empty fiction, let it be unceremoniously flung into the outer darkness among the dead gods, dead empires, dead philosophies, and other useless lumber and wreckage. The most dangerous of all enthroned lies is the holy, the sanctified, the privileged lie, the lie that everybody believes to be a model truth. It is the fruitful mother of all other popular errors and delusions. It is hydra-headed. It has a thousand roots. It is a social cancer. The lie that is known to be a lie is half eradicated, but the lie that even intelligent persons regard as a sacred fact, the lie that has been inculcated around a mother's knee, is more dangerous to contend against than a creeping pestilence. Popular lies have ever been the most potent enemies of personal liberty. There is only one way to deal with them. Cut them out to the very core, just as cancers are. Exterminate them root and branch, or they will surely eat us all up. We must annihilate them, or they will us. Half and half remedies are of no avail. However, when a lie has gone too far, when it has taken up its abode in the very tissues, bones, and brains of a people, then all remedies are useless. Even the lancet is of no avail. Repentance of past misdeeds cannot save decadence from extermination. The fatal bolt is shot, and into the fiery furnace of wholesale slavery and oblivion they must go, to be there righteously consumed. From their ashes something new, something nobler, may possibly evolve, but even that is the merest optimistic supposition. In nature, the wages of sin is always death. Nature does not love the wrongdoer, but endeavors in every possible way to destroy him. Her curse is on the brow of the meek and lowly. Her blessing is on the very hearts' blood of the strong and the brave. Only Jews and Christs and other degenerates think that rejuvenation can ever come through law and prayer. All the tears of all the martyrs might just as well have never been shed. 4. Whatsoever a people believeth shall make it free, enslave it, or corrode its very marrow in strict accordance with natural order. Consequently, if a people place implicit faith in what philosophers teach them, they are liable to be duped. If many nations are so duped, their deception is a menace to the liberty of the world. Freemen should never regulate their conduct by the suggestions or dicta of others, for when they do so, they are no longer free. No man ought to obey any contract, written or implied, except he himself has given his personal and formal adherence thereto, when in a state of mental maturity and unrestrained liberty. It is only slaves that are born into contracts, signed and sealed by their progenitors. The freeman is born free, lives free, and dies free. He is, even though living in an artificial civilization, above all laws, all constitutions, all theories of right and wrong. He supports and defends them, of course, as long as they suit his own end, but if they don't, then he annihilates them by the easiest and most direct method. There is no obligation upon any man to passive obedience when his life, his liberty, and his property are threatened by footpad, assassin, or statesman. One of Columbus's lieutenants in the West Indies captured a Carib chief by means of a subtle stratagem. The chief was invited to a feast, and when there, persuaded with honeyed words to don, on horseback, a set of brightly polished steel manacles, it being cunningly represented to him that the irons were the regalia of sovereignty. He foolishly believed his astute flatterer, and when the chains were firmly clasped around his limbs, he was led away to die of vermin, turning a mill in a Spanish dungeon. What those glittering manacles were to the Indian chieftain, constitutions, laws, moral codes, and Hebrew-dominated civilizations are to the nations of the earth. Indeed, under the name of progress and social evolution, mankind has been lured into fetid dungeons where it labors unceasingly and for naught in darkness, despair, and shame. Like that Spanish lieutenant, the masters of the earth first flatter their dupes in order to more easily enchain them. Who talks nowadays of the sovereign people without a laugh of derision? And yet it was once thought to be a term full of significance. Their sovereignty is now acknowledged sham, and their freedom a dream. The sovereign people be damned. It is clear, therefore, that the man or nation that would retain liberty or be really safe must accept no formula as final, must trust in nothing written or unwritten, living or dead, must believe neither in special Jehovahs nor weeping saviors, neither in raging devils nor in devilish philosophies, neither in ghosts nor in idols nor in laws nor in woman nor in man. O threats of hell and hopes of paradise, one thing at least is certain, this life flies. One thing is certain, and all the rest is lies. The flower that once has bloomed forever dies. 5. He who saith unto himself, I must believe, I must not question, is not a man, but a mere pusillanimous mental gelding. He who believes because it has been handed down is a menial in his heart, and he who believes because it has been written is a fool in his folly. Sagacious spirits doubt all things and hold fast only to that which is demonstrably true. The rules of life are not to be found in Korans, Bibles, Decalogues, and Constitutions, but rather the rules of decadence and death. The law of laws is not written in Hebrew consonants or upon tables of brass and stone, but in every man's own heart. He who obeys any standard of right and wrong, but the one set up by his own conscience, betrays himself into the hands of his enemies, who are ever laying in wait to bind him to their millstones. And generally a man's most dangerous enemies are his neighbors. Masterful men laugh with contempt at spiritual thunders and have no occasion to dread the decisions of any human tribunal. They are above and beyond all that. Laws and regulations are only for conquered vassals. The free man does not require them. He may manufacture and post up Decalogue regulations to bind and control dependents with, but he does not himself bow down before those inventions of his own hands, except as a lure. Statute books and golden rules were made to fetter slaves and fools. Very useful are they for controlling the herds of sentenced convicts, who fill the factories and cultivate the fields. All moral principles, therefore, are the servitors, not the masters of the strong. Power made moral codes, and power abrogates them. A man is under no obligation to obey anything or anybody. It is only serving men that must obey, because they are caitiffs by birth, breeding, and condition. Morals are only required in an immoral community, that is to say, a community held in a state of conquest. Fear God, bridle the spirit, and obey the law is advice most excellent, as from a philosopher to a yokel. But when directed in all earnestness at a man of inherent might, he smiles to himself in silent scorn. Full well he knows that in actual life the path to victory and renown does not lie through Gethsemanes, but over fallen enemies, the ruins of rival combines. Through Alcidamas, meekness of spirit is regarded by him as a convenient superstition, very useful for regulating the lives of his servants, his women, and his children, but otherwise inoperative. I rest my hopes on nothing, proclaimed Goethe, and masterful minds in all ages have never done otherwise. This unspoken thought gives to all truly great men their manifest superiority over the brainless, vociferating herd. The common people have always had to be befooled with some written or wooden or golden idol, some constitution, declaration, or gospel. Consequently, the majority of them have ever been mental thralls, living and dying in an atmosphere of strong illusion. They are befooled and hypnotized even to this hour, and a large proportion of them must remain so until time is no more. Indeed, the masses of mankind are but the sediment from which all the more valuable elements have been long ago distilled. They are totally incapable of real freedom, and if it was granted to them, they would straightway vote themselves a master or 1,000 masters within 24 hours. A mastership is right. Mastership is natural. Mastership is eternal, but only for those who cannot overthrow it and trample it beneath their hoofs. It is not a fact that in actual life, the ballot box votes of 10 million subjective personalities are as thistle down to the balance when weighed against the far-seeing thought and material prowess of, say, 10 strong silent men. 6. It is notorious, universally so, that the blackest falsehoods are ever decked out in the most brilliant and gorgeous regalia. Clearly, therefore, it is the brave man's duty to regard all sacred things, all legal things, all constitutional things, all holy things, with more than usual suspicion. I deny and I affirm is the countersign of material freedom. I believe and I obey is the shibboleth of serfage. Belief is a flunky, a feminine. Doubt is a creator, a master. He who denies fundamentals is in triple armor clad. Indeed, he is invulnerable. On the other hand, it has been said that every belief, every philosophy, has some truth in it. But so we might add, has every insanity. Strong men are not deterred from pursuing their aim by anything. They go straight to the goal, and that goal is beauty, wealth, and material power. The mission of power is to control and exploit the powerless, for to be powerless is to be criminal. The world would indeed be a house of horrors if all men were good, and all women padlocked. As far as human searchlights have yet penetrated into the darkness that enshrouds the origin of nations, we see the subduers and the subdued, the plebeians and the patricians, the chiefs who governed and the vassals who obeyed. And there is nothing in the most modern social developments, or these deedless days, to warrant any belief that this ancient and natural division of human animals into castes of superiors and inferiors, sovereigns and serfs, can ever be dispensed with. The slave owner's whip cracked from the beginning, and it will crack till the day of doom. In every kingdom, republic, and empire on earth, we have, in one disguise or another, the master and the slave, the ruler and the ruled. In the course of centuries, names alone have changed. Essentials have remained the same. Forms of royalty may alter, but kings can never die. There was mastership at the beginning, and there will be mastership to the end. We build, but as our fathers built. Change is not progress, nor numbers advance. Everyone who would be free must show his power. Everyone who would be free must show his power. Unalterable remains the basis of all earthly greatness. He who exalteth himself shall be exalted, and he who humbleth himself shall be righteously trodden beneath the hoofs of the herd. The humble are only fit for dogs as meat. Bravery includes every virtue, humility every crime. He who is afraid to risk his life must never be permitted to win anything. Human rights and wrongs are not determined by justice, but by might. Disguise it as you may, the naked sword is still kingmaker and kingbreaker as of yore. All other theories are lies and lures. Therefore, if you would conquer wealth and honor, power and fame, you must be practical, grim, cool, and merciless. You must ride to success, by preference, over the necks of your foemen. Their defeat is your strength. Their downfall is your uplifting. Only the powerful can be free, and power is non-moral. Life is real. Life is earnest, and neither heaven nor hell its final goal. And love, and joy, and birth, and death, and fate, and strife shall be forever. This earth is a vast whirl of warring atoms, a veritable revolving cockpit. Each molecule, each animal fights for its life. You must fight for yours, or surrender. Look well to it, therefore, that your beaks and spurs, your fangs and claws are as sharp as steel, and as effective as science can make them. Though the survival of the strongest is the logic of events, yet personal cowardice is the great vice of our demoralized age. Cowardice is corroding the brain and blood of our race, but men have learnt to disguise this terrible infirmity. Behind the canting wine of humanity and goodness, words flow instead of blood, and terrible insults are exchanged instead of terrible blows. How rich this degenerate world is in small, petty-souled good-for-nothings, who are forever excusing their infantile ineptitude behind some plausible phrase, some conventional make-believe. Courage, I say, courage, not goodness, is the great desideratum. Courage that requires neither tin horns, nor calcium lights, nor brass bands, nor shouting multitudes to call it into effective action. But courage that goes its way alone, as undauntedly as when it marches to victory or death amid the menacing stride of armed and bannered legions. Courage that delights in danger. Courage that knows not despair. Courage that proudly, defiantly smiles on death. courage that regards with equal loathing the multitude's mad howls of hate, its stupid hee-haws, and its stridulating, tremendous applause. Courage that asks no quarter, even with the knife at its throat. Courage that is stiff-necked, unyielding, sullen, pitiless. Courage that never falters, never retreats. Courage that looks down with supreme disdain upon all slave regulations, upon all rights and wrongs, upon all good and evil. Courage that has made up its mind to conquer or perish. That is the kind of courage this world lacks. That is the kind of courage that aids by active cooperation the survival of the fittest, the survival of the best. That is the kind of courage that has never turned a master's mill. That is the kind of courage that never will turn it. That is the kind of courage that will die rather than turn it. When Svitdag came to the enclosure, the gate of the burg was shut, for it was customary to ask leave to come in and see or take part in the war games. Svitdag did not take that trouble, but broke open the gate and rode into the yard. Queen Yssa said, "This man will be welcome here."
I need to hear that kind of stuff about once a week or better, you know? I think we all need it. Sort of gets the cobwebs out of our brain. And this just in from Russia. Just several of the victims of the Odessa massacre. It's really a crime to be white and Russian in the Ukraine. May 2nd, 2014. Burnt alive, sadistically beaten till death, shot point blank, thrown from windows, and so on. But the Russian death squads, call them lone wolves if you wish, or leaderless resistance, are working. Some Google translation here. There must be payback. The Russian revenge remained alive only five Ukrainian creatures, girls mainly, who were making Molotov cocktails on May 2, 2014. The remaining will be exterminated for sure. The fresh victim last week in Russia, the city of Samara, where she tried to hide running from the Ukraine, from local newspapers, near the train station, next to the railroad tracks, was found the corpse of a young girl. The corpse is greatly disfigured, broken bones, but her face was not touched, for obvious reasons. Inside her genitals, a Molotov cocktail bottle was inserted. As it was established by the Russian police, this girl, a native of the Ukraine, took an active part in the bloody events of May 2, 2014 in Odessa. From the photographs on the spot, May 2, 2014, it was established that she poured flammable liquid in the bottles, and the police searched her killer's traces, but to no avail. Another victim was thrown out from the roof of a tall building, Odessa Road 66. Many were simply cut out in pieces right in their homes, in front of their families and members, quietly in the morning hours. A number were drowned, strangely, in two and threes. And the reason was officially blamed on alcohol. Yep, when the hour is proper, the Russian bear may be pretty tough and cruel. Evidently, these were young people who decided to terrorize the Russian citizens with Molotov cocktails, and they ended up paying the price. Yes, sir, it don't pay to screw around if you're dealing with lone wolves or leaderless resistance. They don't go to meetings. They don't parade. They don't wear uniforms. They don't wave flags. They just take care of business. Well, 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 let's look into churchianity here a little bit. The more mixed the Sunday morning pews are, the fewer people are likely to be in them. That's the primary finding of a new study from Baylor University published in the current Journal for Scientific Study of Religion. Wow. Researchers studied the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, where racial diversity doubled from 1993 to 2012, and found that at the same time, churches with the greatest diversity growth also had the steepest decline in attendance. Kenneth Daugherty, an associate professor of sociology at Baylor and lead author on the study, said the findings should not be taken as a stab at racial diversity in churches. Well, why not? Why not? Rather, he said it shows congregations that are not originally planted in church parlance as diverse will have a tough time becoming so after they're planted. I guess that means they got to start slow and get the people all screwed up for later. That change in the fundamental character of a congregation is an extremely daunting task. Daugherty said, the congregations intentionally planted as diverse from the beginning have the greatest potential to sustain that change, while those that are trying to change their diversity will have a bumpy road ahead. In other words, if you slip the small end of the blade in first, it's more successful. Why do you think they integrated the schools and everything else? They started slow, and then they build up until where they're, you know, the way they are today, a race-mixed mess. The study found rises in racial diversity were associated with declines in weekly attendance, especially in the 1990s. Older congregations were more likely to see a decline in attendance. Congregations in predominantly white communities were more likely to grow. The study was conducted, study was conducted among more than 11,000 ELCA congregations and used data from the U.S. Census Bureau. ELCA is one of the least racially diverse denominations in the U.S., according to the Pew Research Center, with white people making up 96% of its membership. Only the National Baptist Convention, with 99% black membership, is less diverse. Gerardo Marti, an associate professor of sociology at Davidson College at Brandon Martinez, and Brandon Martinez, an assistant professor of sociology at Providence College, were co-authors of this study. You don't hear much about that, do you? So religion is gradually losing ground because it's integrating the churches. And people don't like it. Don't like that stuff. Here's another little thing that might explain a few things. There's a lot of theories to explain why large swaths of evangelicals seem to like a narcissistic, vulgar, misogynistic, intolerant, and angry reality TV star who behaves like a schoolyard bully and has a temperament that is diametrically opposed to the meekness, humanity, and prudence necessary to lead the free world. I will not rehearse them here. Well, if you try to operate in the free world like that, you're going to end up being slaves. That's right. Meek. Meek? Ha ha ha. But as a historian, it is also my job to take a longer view, to look deeper into the American evangelical past in search of answers. Is there something inherent within the American evangelicalism as it has developed over the decades that has led to so many born-again Christians to vote for Trump? Well, I think my answer to that is simply they voted with their pocketbook. Having a job and having food on the table and maybe having a new car was more important to them than the baby Jesus. What do you think about that? In other words, most of them are hypocrites. In 1994, Mark Nall, a history professor at Evangelical Wheaton College, published the book The Scandal of the Evangelical Mind. The book began with what is now much quoted phrase among evangelical intelligentsia. Quote, the scandal of the evangelical mind is that there is not much of an evangelical mind, unquote. Null then went on to describe a deep-seated anti-intellectual impulse that has long characterized American evangelicalism. In other words, they're stupid. He's calling them stupid. Then years after, 10 years after it was published, the editors of Christianity Today claim Newell's book arguably shaped the evangelical world, or at least its institutions, more than any other book in the last decade. On one level, Christianity Today was correct. The evangelical mind is doing better these days. Don't sound like it to me. Young evangelicals now see the pursuit of an intellectual life as a legitimate Christian calling. In other words, to get brainwashed. They're contributing to a vibrant renaissance of Christian thinking about history, politics, science, nature, and the arts. Well, the churches change all the time so they can keep the money coming in. But the scandal still exists. Conservative Protestants have a long way to go if they want to rid themselves of the anti-intellectual populism that Nall lamented almost a quarter of a century ago. In other words, working people are stupid and they have to be intellectual. And they're not intellectual enough. Well, I find most of the stupidest people in the country or in the world are intellectual superiors. Evangelical churches and colleges have failed to educate people on how to think Christianity about their role as citizens. They've failed to teach their constituents Christian habits of acting in the world that allow them to make meaningful contributions to America's democracy. Read between the lines, boys and girls. Isn't it any wonder that so many evangelicals have cast votes for Donald Trump? No, it isn't, because they're voting with their pocketbook. Part of the responsibility is for bringing a more thoughtful understanding of politics and culture to everyday conservative Protestants rests with evangelical intellectuals. Yeah, you got to have these intellectuals, man. They'll tell you what for. It would be nice if evangelical scholars could play a more sustained role in their churches, do a better job of brainwashing. But oftentimes they are either too busy writing monographs or too tired from teaching students and serving their academic institutions to help people in the pews think more deeply. You got to think more deeply about these issues. And then there are the evangelical colleges. It is often unclear how these institutions serve the larger evangelical world. Christian philosopher and educator Richard Mao tried to explain their impact in 1995 when he wrote, quote, "Tens of thousands of young people in Christian evangelical colleges and seminaries are receiving a trickle-down effect from their professors' work. These are future lay people." I am sympathetic to Mao and those who hope for an intellectual trickle-down effect, brainwashing effect, but such an approach does not seem to be working. Evangelical students are no longer interested in studying the humanities. Enrollment in the humanity fields, history, philosophy, literature, theology, at evangelical colleges has experienced a precipitous decline over the last decades. Yet these are disciplines that teach evangelical young people how to live together with their deepest differences, reflect on the purpose of life, and think critically about the world. Cultivate moral courage, make evidence-based arguments, and recognize that life does not always fit easily into binary categories. Well, you got to keep, they can't be too smart. You got to keep them stupid. Now, how are you going to do that? Because you're saying they got to become intellectuals. Well, I guess the right kind of intellectuals. These are the subjects that raise the kind of questions that go to the heart of Christian education. They help us see the world from the perspective of others and teach us humility as we ponder our place in the expanse of human history. Boy, they like to throw those words around, don't they? They help us to understand the common good and to serve it. They make us informed citizens. Isn't that brainwashed citizens? Unfortunately, today we are training evangelicals for our capitalist economy. We are not training them for life in our democracy. Definition, democracy, some kind of Jewish socialism, I guess. Many Christian colleges are just keep trying to keep the doors open. Physical therapy and accounting majors bring in a lot of tuition revenue. If students do not want to study the humanities, then these institutions are happy to offer programs, ever more programs, they will want to pursue, like basket weaving and the Communist Manifesto. Such colleges must bow to consumer needs in order to survive. Give them what they want, not what they need. Boy, oh boy, this is really something. Let's see here. Evangelical churches have created spaces where conversations can take place about how to apply the Christian faith to culture, politics, art, nature, or our understanding of the past, its relationship to the present. See, this is all based on bullshit. The very formation of Christianity, it's all based on bullshit. And it's how are you going to keep them down on the farm when it keeps changing all the time? You got to fit into the modern thing, the new thing. How are you going to keep them thinking about Jesus? There's more people in the insane asylums, mental hospitals, due to religion than anything else. I'm not going to read the rest of it. Oh, wait a minute. In the end, I do not have much patience for evangelical leaders who are shocked and surprised that so many people supported Donald Trump. We have reaped what we have sown. We evangelicals can and must do better. Well, when people don't have a job, they're living in a car, I think they've given up a little bit on the baby Jesus. Donald Trump looks a little bit more like the baby Jesus. After all, what have they got to lose? Tell you how they could get more members is have the church, with all that money they're sending over to dig wells in Africa, because the Negroes are too stupid to do it, is go to a wrecking company and buy 25 or 50 cars and put them along some street someplace and tell people if they join your church, they can live in a car, like this is your house. Yeah, that would do more good than all the rest. Well, that's it for today, boys and girls. There's enough of this nonsense, and now we can go on to something else. Tomorrow, Thursday. Oh, boy. I like Thursday. Now I'm going to play you one of my favorite songs, man. Daddy was a preacher, man, but Mama was a go-go girl. Here we go.
Go girl. Yeah, well, daddy was. closer.